and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on smart speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham, and we are in your ears thanks to Flowers Unlimited. Well, then, the nights are closing in, our summer clothes have been put away, and we're trying to remember where we've put our winter coats. That must mean it's time for Crumble, and that's exactly what Spurs did on Sunday, as the Albion came from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at a jubilant Amex. All in all, it was an amazing weekend for the Albion, with the women's team beating Aston Villa at Crawley 4-2, and then our under-21s greet Crystal Palace 10, open bracket, T-E-N, close bracket, nil at Lancing. The international break robs the men of a fixture this weekend, but the women's team are in action as they try to match our under-21s performance as they travel to Crystal Palace on Sunday. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the one and only Mr. Andy Bass and the also one and only Mr. Nick Schepanik. Hello, boys. You all right?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well.
When you say one and only, do you mean one and only of each of those names, or one and only as in we've got one guest who's got to split the one and only chores?
Well, there's
many ones in there.
I've now got Chesney Hawks in my head. I saw Chesney Hawks in the summer.
Is there a punchline to this?
No. I took my daughter Molly to Butlins and down in Bognor. And they had the Masked Singer and on there as one of the events you could go into. And Chesney was unmasked twice.
What, was a singer?
He was the Masked Singer, yeah.
Oh.
Sunita was the other one.
And on that bombshell.
that sound of barrel is really, really scraping me.
I know. Well, I felt really sorry for Sunita, actually. She lost twice.
What, to you?
Well, I wasn't singing, but, you know.
EFFT. Right, what's happened this weekend then, AD?
I don't know what has happened this weekend. Well, I think we'll start at the Amex on Sunday. I know you're desperate to talk about the annihilation of Crystal Palace, but we'll save that for a little bit later on. But let's get on to the Amex this Sunday, Nick. And it was a tale of hello and goodbye, wasn't it? With firstly saying goodbye to Barry Lloyd and also saying hello back to Pascal Gross.
What a fantastic suit and what a great haircut Pascal had.
It was almost like it was a St. Pauli tie.
People don't wear ties much these days, do they? I mean, even on some very formal occasions, and I'm judging football writers' dinners and and Albion Player of the Year dinners. Ties are conspicuous by their absence, but Pascal was sporting a very spiffy one, yeah.
And he was perfectly clean-shaven as well. I think that was the other thing that made him look even more of an estate agent. He turned out very, very spiffy. But actually, Andy, we've got to ask this question because I know that you know this more than any others about Albion end-of-season dinners. I mean, it's one thing wearing a tie, but do you suppose he had any socks on?
I think he did on so. I think Gross wears socks. Not
Gross
all players,
is all about the sock.
Explain this fashion misstep? Well, to us old people it is, but can you explain this fashion misstep to us, Andy?
No, I can't. It's ridiculous.
Three-quarter-length trousers as well to show off the gorgeous ankle.
The shapely ankle. Yeah.
Players.
But yeah, it was wonderful to get away with an absence of socks. That's all I'd say.
But it was wonderful to see Pascal. I mean, not every player gets to have that goodbye that he got. Normally, it was something that you get at the end of the season. So to be able to like do that and in front of a full Amex, everyone came in to give him their best because, you know, I mean, we had this conversation, Nick, on the show when he left about whether or not he's the greatest Albion player of all time. Where do you stand on that?
Top five, certainly. Those of us who remember them in the old First Division, you know, we'll always have a soft spot for Lawrenson and Horton and Ward and that guy. You know, it's very hard to compare that with Premier League era, Glenn Murray. yeah, but you can't leave him out of the conversation, especially with the value and the consistency. There was a couple of people on in the press room on Sunday saying, you know, why did they let him go? And you know, you say, well, he wanted to play for his boyhood club. In coming to the end of a contract, and he is, you know, 30, God knows how old. And you know, have we seen the last? Have we seen the last of the great Pascal Gross performances? I was actually watching him play against Celtic last week, and thinking, well, you know, he's doing okay, and they're battering Celtic, and he presumably will come up with a couple of goals. He didn't really. I think we possibly went at the right time for him, the right time for us, and best of luck to him.
Did your colleagues in the press room really buy the whole notion of, well, he's going to his boyhood club? And I think he, you know, we know that he always said he wanted to go home, you know, before the end of his career. But did your colleagues buy it?
Well, I think they were also quite impressed that we got, was it 8 million for him?
Yeah.
That's not bad for a player
Undisclosed,
of his age.
Cliff. Undisclosed.
Sorry, an undisclosed 8 million for him, which is great for a player at his stage of his career. You know, with that amount of contract left, there were people saying that we should have let him go for an undisclosed amount of zero. But I mean, that's taken generosity quite a long way, I think, in this day and age, and for a player who probably still has lots to offer. And I was recently got into the Germany squad.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, his career almost seems to have properly started on side two, track three. That's an old Vinyl Reference, kids, by the way. What do you suppose it was, Nick? Because Pascal never got his chance to say goodbye. In other words, it evidently wasn't the done deal come the last day of the season. Do you know what the whole holdup was before it
Well,
was he eventually went to Dortmund?
I think the club wanted to keep him. I mean, Hertzler is reported to have actually phoned him and talked it through with him, and saying he wanted to have him this season. So I was by no means a certainty that he was going to go. If I think Hertzler was a bit disappointed, not entirely sure where he would have fitted exactly into the Hertzler plan, but I mean, it was. I think he was disappointed that a deal couldn't be done, and that he definitely didn't want to go. So that's why there wasn't, you know, the sort of Alexis McAllister style waves goodbye and tears at the end. No, I think Hertzler would have kept him if that had been possible.
I think we can safely assume that with the fabled high line, I don't think we'd be playing Pascal at right back this season if he had stayed.
No, but what it does do is actually the what Nick is saying there, it probably does explain the 8 million, because you know, basically Dortmund had to prize him from us, irrespective of the fact that yes, Pascal wanted to go, and he probably would have been given the chance to have gone next year, but you know, that means he would have been 34, knocking on 35,
Wait,
and
can I just go back to what Eddie said there? Don't forget that they put Pascal at right back and took Veltman off against Mudryk at Chelsea the other year. So you know, don't discount the
Oh,
sort of
this
hidden speed of
pace,
Pascal Gross.
yeah, but
speed.
to be fair, everyone's had to go through that particular rites of passage of playing at right back, whether you're supposed to play there or not.
Yeah.
You know, but even Belieber's had a go there.
Well, that was left back, but yeah, it was close enough. Okay, but we also said goodbye to Barry Lloyd as well. Obviously, I don't know if it who's heard the show last week, but it was a very, very moving show from Hartie and Robert Codden last week, Al. And it was nice that the stadium came together to say goodbye to him as well.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it was an appropriate thing. I think that I suspect that TV is actually now shortening these things, because it's supposed to be a minute's appreciation. It was probably closer to 20 seconds.
A period of applause.
Is it a
They don't
period?
even say a
Yes.
minute any
So it
longer.
was a full stop of applause. But it was appreciated. I think it probably meant very little to the Spurs fans, but you know, to be fair, they joined in, and I think that, you know, they appreciate it when someone who is respected within football, you know, passes away. And you know, I mean, crying out loud, we ended up singing halftime songs for Chas Hodges when Spurs were down 1 year.
Oh my God, we did, didn't we? God, I forgot about
Yeah, there
that.
you
That was
go.
that was a long time ago. Yeah, you know, but you know, he had more work to his cannon
That's well, a, yeah, more rabbit than Sainsbury's, I think.
Yeah, than just Chaz and
but,
Dave.
But
you know,
like most Spurs fans,
and Pete, you're a classic band. But,
well, this is it. But this, but like most Spurs fans, there ain't no pleasing in them.
Oh, I see we did that. And there certainly wasn't at the final whistle, Nick. And I mean, it's a cliche. I am cliched-y. So I'll go with it. It was a game of two halves.
Yeah, and those who read my report in the Eye on Monday will realise that was a report of two halves. The Eye do a strange thing of wanting to file 300 words on each team. I filed the Albion piece on top of the Spurs piece, assuming that they'd put a top six disaster back on top of it. But no, they didn't. So credit to them for putting the second half first, as it were. Utterly astonishing. I think, like a lot of people, I was just assuming that things would go maybe marginally better in the second half. But if Spurs sort of decided they'd done their work, but I had no clue that that was going to happen. Like everybody else in the stadium, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but I mean, Andy, the game itself didn't actually start particularly well. The warning signs were there that Spurs were here just not to make up the numbers. And Timo Werner broke the line, and he really should have put it on a plate for Brennan Johnson to give Spurs a lead. And it was just like breaking the line.
Yeah, but I mean, it was, you know, right from the kickoff. I'm not sure that really tactically the tactics were a problem. It was for me the intensity of our play. I thought we were a yard off all the time. Spurs were really aggressive. They were competing for the ball. They were really working hard all the time, and we just weren't on it.
I was a bit surprised when Hertzler said that Albion weren't ready for Spurs' intensity in the first half. Hadn't they seen their game at Manchester United? And you know, what exactly were they expecting? I would have thought that we would have been, you know, right up for it after the Chelsea game and wanting to prove a point, but seemed to take us until half time and slightly beyond to realize, well, 3 minutes beyond, to realize that, you know, we had to get into that game.
I don't think it was that we were unprepared for it, but the players just started slowly. I think they had been told and they'd been working on it. And Hertzler said, like, you know, we played like we didn't have the intensity, but we had discussed it and we had been working on it in the week, and for some reason we just didn't have the energy required, and it was really disappointing. I mean, from my point of view, I thought we played very poorly in that first half, and yeah. And that's the first time I've actually come out of a half of being really annoyed with the performance as a whole, as opposed to just like one or two individual errors.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Spurs could have taken the lead twice before they actually did. I mean, they had one goal which was disallowed, which was
it was less offside than I thought it was at the time. I thought it was quite.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I mean, you've got. I'm not going to more offside than that.
Yeah, I've seen it since. It's just and just good. So yeah.
But I mean, we're going to touch on it in a bit.
Can I just make a point here, though, Adi, that it's actually going into that particular part of the game is that, you know, Spurs were clearly on the front foot. They were clearly up for it. They were playing a lot better than they normally do when they play against us. It's certainly down here. I mean, don't forget, when we play them up there, they have the referee as well. So when it's down here, you know, we stuffed four past them before they started playing last time. But what the concern for me was, and I don't know if it was something that I felt because I didn't really watch the game that much, was whether the Albion players had the confidence really badly knocked out of them, not just by a 4-2 defeat, which people have sort of, you know, really started grizzling about, and including one of them who felt he had to delete his social media account because of the grief he was getting. And these things, you know, they don't live in that vacuum that they think they do. And I can't help wondering if it was a sort of a massive loss of confidence. They certainly seem to be playing a little bit nervously, and it took a while to get going. Yeah, we had a couple of good chances, and Danny Welbeck did miss he missed a sitter. Mm. I can't help feeling, though, as overall that we played better in the first half than they did in the second, but that's sort of, you know, highly subjective. But I kind of feeling also that we took into that game, certainly me as a fan, I took into that game a certain level of a
Baggage.
lack of confidence, which was completely obliterated by their second half performance.
Yeah, you know what? I think there might be something in that. It would certainly explain why we just weren't fully at the races. I mean, I thought I described it quite well on Match of the Day, actually. They were just saying, there wasn't really, it wasn't really the tactics that were the problem for the Albion. It's just that we weren't pressing them enough. We just physically weren't getting close enough to the ball or to the players, which is something that we rectified in the second half. We kind of played the same way, but we played faster and we played harder. And I think that is key to making this team work. It's like, I don't think the tactics necessarily are the problem, but for them to be successful, you've really got to commit and you've got to put a shift in. I kind of wonder whether Spurs actually run out of puff a little bit because they were so dominant in the first half. They were superb in just like competing for every ball, every second ball, every challenge. We just weren't at it.
Ursula was saying that there was nothing in any sort of suggestion they were tired after the trip to Budapest on the Thursday because only three of them had played. But it's not just a question of playing, is it? It's a question of the sort of rigmarole of getting to a foreign country and all training on foreign grounds and then getting back at early hours of the morning on Friday and all that. I think they were possibly a little bit tired. But obviously, the substitution, the introduction of Purvis for the second half, and one of those performances that we've been missing from him, I think, for quite a long time. He
Fully
finally looked
agree.
like the Purvis of old. And of course, that affects what Mitoma was able to do, and it affected the defensive line because Kadioglu had been keeping people on side, hadn't really been, what is it? He calls it an active line, not a high
She's
line.
an active line indeed.
Yeah, he
That
was
is a hell of a
completely inactive for
euphemism.
the
Well,
first half.
what was the issue with the active line for their first goal then, Nick?
Kadioglu wasn't being active. Yeah, I mean, I expect Ferdi, to be a really good asset for us as he gets used to the system and gets used to everybody and the higher pace of English football. He hasn't really looked quite at it in his two Premier League appearances, although he made a good impression in coming on against Wolves. So, yeah, good to see Purvis back, and he made a heck of a difference.
Okay, but I mean, going back to that first half, Andy. I mean, you were saying that you thought it was a terrible performance. I mean, we still had two clear-cut chances in that game. The first of which Al's already alluded to, which is the one where Danny Welbeck really, really should have equalised when it was sliding onto the absolute peach of a ball from Kerry Mitoma, and then the header which just drifted wide from a great ball. This time it was from 30.
Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre that we actually had the opportunities to level the score in that half. So I suppose they took that kernel of hope, and I think Herzl had been able to communicate that look, we could have, okay, we got beat this half, but you could have had two. And I mean, it's interesting looking at Danny's post-match interview. He was very annoyed with himself.
He
He
really
was
was for missing out with
disappointed
Theo. We were
not to have
furious
scored.
with him. Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean,
Andy,
obviously.
can I just sort of throw something else within that is actually the build up into that, and this is the rise, the gradual rise, and I still think we shouldn't be getting ahead of ourselves because I still think it's potential rather than actual stuff. But it was all brought about by Belieber turning his man just outside the box and then running 50 yards virtually unchallenged. When I say virtually unchallenged, no one could get near him. And the ball to the right wasn't on, so he stopped and played an intelligent ball out to the left where he found Mitoma. And it's that kind of thing. He doesn't win it every time. And there is this whole notion, and Andy alluded to it, of the whole risk and reward, which is, to be frank, what we had under De Zerbi. If you're going to play the game right, if they're going to do what the manager is asking of them, then it's going to look okay. Point in case second half, point in case, from last season, many, many games. When it goes wrong, boy, does it go wrong. But sorry, getting back to sort of unearthing another gem. I think that Belieber was always sort of like a bubbling under talent, but this is, I think, the opportunity he's now got with Gross gone, with Gilmore gone. He's the one that's got to step up because, frankly, at the moment there's no one else. Everyone has either been, suspended or shot, and he's having to step up. At which, at the same time, I'd also say, and this is something that I'm not particularly comfortable with, is what I'm hearing is, I believe, is the inherent criticism of Jack Hinshelwood in the middle of midfield. Yes, we know he's a decent right back and he knows his preferred place is in the middle of midfield, but it's now got to the point where he doesn't look out of place there. It's just that Belieber does all such the flash stuff. We don't necessarily notice Hinshelwood, sort of doing the hard yards that he does. Is that Dale Stevenson role. Now, one of the reasons that Spurs did as well as they did was because they were bypassing Hinshelwood, but that for me wasn't about him being out of position or not doing anything right. It's because Spurs had a flooded midfield compared to ours, and it needed sorting.
Nick, is Jack Hinshelwood the water carrier?
Don't forget Mats Svefa as well, who came on for Belabor and had a really good sort of settling influence, I think, on the team. It was kind of interesting that at Chelsea he played Svefa as the deep midfield player and let Belabor and Hinshelwood go further forward. He went back to just the two of them, I think, for at home to Spurs, perhaps thinking we didn't need to be quite as defensive in the centre. But no, I mean, Hinshelwood, he's grown up in that position, so he knows what has to be done. And he's, of course, he's out to do whatever the team requires. I mean, he's a very sort of conscientious player, and when Belieber goes hairing off with the ball, I mean, he will be slotting into that covering position, which is not as noticeable as those sort of Belieber surges down the middle, but it's just as valuable. And he's sort of filling in all the gaps and doing the sort of thing that James Milner was probably aimed up to do at the beginning of the season before his inevitable injury.
This is it. Okay,
Come
well,
the, sorry, come the day that Jack Hinshelwood goes on a 50-yard surge, then that's a field when only people are going to recognize him, his central midfield role. And I think that's an unfair way of putting it, because him and Belieber are clearly chalk and cheese, and yet together, I'm sure there's another sort of food sort of metaphor I could come up with to say how well they work together. I mean, they're clearly not Caicedo and McAllister together yet, but the potential is there.
The potential is there, but then, I mean, how long is he going to be there? I mean, it's up to him to put in the performances to make sure that he is there, because O'Reilly's going to be coming back. Vifa is going to be
Well,
fit
why isn't
and get
Vifa
better into it.
starting? Okay, so Nick, mate, have you got the inside track on this? Do you know why Vifa
No,
isn't starting?
no, no. That's well. I was going to go back to what I said about Chelsea. Obviously, wanted a slightly different midfield formation because he played a sort of 4-3, well, 4-1-2-3 at Chelsea with Vifa just in front of the defence and the other two allowed to go slightly further forward. I think you that's very defensive formation isn't quite right for a home game possibly. And he just so he pulled those two back. And they've got slightly younger legs, and perhaps he just thought there'd be more energy midfield there. But I think eventually Vifa will be one of the guys we see there. It'll be Vifa and one other.
And it's also getting used to getting used to the division, getting used to the country, getting used to the new team, etc. It doesn't always necessarily happen straight away. And he's shown some absolutely wonderful signs. I saw enough of him in pre-season to think he might go on to be the player of the season. So I'm hoping that he certainly does
Not yet.
play. But
I
yeah,
thought Belieber might be the left back, but after what
maybe.
we saw in some games.
Okay, but before we move on to the second half heroics, we do need to talk about the second goal. Now, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. It's not something
Yes,
we
you
do on
do,
this
you're, and
show.
you're going to, aren't you?
Well, no, I mean, basically, I'm just. There's been a couple of errors from Bart in the last couple of games, and I'm going back to the goal that was disallowed in this game as well, which he really should have done better with. It just seems to. I think Nick mentioned the word confidence earlier, and I think that his confidence against Chelsea, he made an error in that game as well, that was punished. He really should have been saving that shot from Maddison in this game. And like I said, we're not gonna. I'm not. I don't want to throw pelters at anybody, but I do. I mean, we saw the amount of grief that Adam Webster got in the game for a schoolboy error against Chelsea, and the amount of abuse that he got. If that was Jason Steele in goal, he would have got exactly the same amount of grief that Webster got. And it's just like, it's just stupid, isn't it? I mean, Andy.
It was ever thus that we always, Andy, have to have a pantomime villain, don't we?
Yeah, I completely agree with those comments about Bart and Jason Steele. But also, I thought in the build up to the goal, it was actually the sort of the attack came from Jorginho losing the ball like two thirds of the way up our half, and I thought it was symptomatic of a problem that we had at Chelsea, particularly in the first half at Chelsea, where we just seem to be weak in the challenge. And again, this goes back to sort of that lack of intensity. And obviously, Jorginho clearly made up for it. And he had an otherwise terrific game. But again, I thought it was pretty weak, a cheap way to give away the ball, which allowed us to get, caught on that move. And yeah, you're right. I mean, Bart should have been saving it anyway. But I do think Lewis Dunk might have been sort of crowding his vision a little bit. So he might have just been half a second too late going down to it, because Lewis was kind of in his line of vision as Maddison put the ball around Lewis. I mean, even Lewis maybe could have taken another step forward.
I was about to say, Lewis was backing off a little bit. I mean, there was only one pass on for the whoever the Spurs wide player was, and you think, well, he's either going to cross it and shoot, in which case he's covered, or he's going to play it right to Maddison, and Dunk was about 5 yards off him, where he should have been two or three, I think. Oh, it's easy in hindsight to say that.
I don't like to, but I think you've got to give credit to Maddison, actually, because there's an angle from behind
not
his
shot.
Not on
this show, you don't, Nick.
Okay, well, if this was another show, you'd probably look at it, and you thought he'd actually use Dunk, to shield the view of the ball.
Yeah,
I think he did.
And and shot into the area. He probably should have put it a little bit further to Bart's left, but and was probably cursing himself for hitting a rather undercooked shot until he realized it had gone in. I don't know. I mean, nothing against Bart. I wasn't really sure why we needed to sign another goalkeeper when we had so many really good young goalkeepers coming through, and the Rushworth and people like that. I don't know. I'm not an expert on goalkeeping, but
okay. One day we'll have a keeper on.
Okay. Well, let's go on to the second half then, and it was a lot better, and it only took us 2 minutes to get a foothold in the game.
Sorry, AD, do you mind if I take us back about 15 minutes from where you're about to go?
Yes, you can.
And I do have to start praising. There's been elements of it this season already, but I do have to praise, and I think he is now our outhouser in chief of Joel Veltman, especially the way he dealt with James Maddison. Maddison, doing what Maddison does, decides to go down by having been smashed around the back of the head with a feather. Sort of bits of whatever language they can trade insults in. And then as soon as Maddison gets up, Veltman throws himself to the ground. A lot of people don't get it, but like I say, he's I don't think he's quite in the more pay category, but if every team does have an outhouser, then Veltman is certainly our man.
Well, he's the outhouser's outhouser. There's no question about that. I mean, he's it's a fine art for him, and yes. Long may it continue until referees get wise to it.
Okay, I'm fast forwarding 15 minutes to the beginning of the second half, Alan. It only took us 2 minutes to get a foothold in the game, and it was at. And Minte, who actually pulled the goal back after Carew's goal ball into the box, called absolute chaos.
It wasn't really chaos; it was just clumsiness. I mean, it was a decent ball, but one which the defenders were in the right place to clear. I mean, as opposed to the one where Welbeck missed in the first half was arguing. Well, it was a much much better ball because it was basically on a plate. But them's the breaks.
I think it was I kind of disagree a little bit. I mean, you would have expected the defender could have defended it better, but it was a good ball because we had two people in the box. That's what pleased me about that goal. A, we attacked very quickly, but we had the bodies in there to take advantage of any possible error, and Minta just gobbled that opportunity up, and then was already picking the ball up to run back to the halfway line, and then like you could just tell the momentum had shifted. The players had not given up. They decided we're getting back in this game, and I think it's been quite a common thing in this season. We've actually, particularly at the Amex, we've actually started second halves really quickly, but we just haven't really taken the opportunities that we've created in that sort of opening 10, 15-minute spell after the break. And for us to get that goal, it just shows, I mean, yeah, goals obviously change games, but it gave us a confidence. And we never looked back. We never looked back from that moment.
Nick, there was talk after the game of the rallying call in the dressing room at half time that came from the senior players, including those who weren't necessarily on the pitch. Now, I was talking to another show this week about the loss of Adam Lallana and of Pascal, and how important these players were, even if they're not playing, in helping and cajoling all the other players. And it seems that James Milner and Jason Steele were ringleaders in chief in the dressing room at half time.
Oh no, definitely. That's the value of those players and Welbeck. I mean, that's what they were brought in, to supply leadership. I mean, we know that Lallana was very vocal on the training ground, and has called out players, international players, when he does thinks they're not pulling their weight. And Milner obviously does the same sort of thing. I mean, he's a noticeable vocal presence on the pitch. We never had him on our team during lockdown. You could hear Lallana shouting, during
Oh
games.
God, couldn't you? Oh
Milner
God, yes.
does the same thing, and obviously carries it on. When he's not playing, which is great. That's what you want. I mean, you want the feeling that everybody's pulling together, and it's good that Tuitsula, gave them a chance to speak. Well, assuming they didn't just sort of shout him down, but no, I think that's good. He's always spoken about the value of those players and what they can contribute,
Was
and
it?
it's great to have the evidence that that's happened.
It's interesting that also one of those that Welbeck mentioned was Jan Poole, and he's not what I call a senior player by any stretch of the major imagination, but seems to have a senior head on his shoulders. And like I say, he's still only what, second, third year player, and is I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on this show, AD or Andy, that Jan Poole van Hekker is my favourite player of the Albion at the moment. Not necessarily the best, but my favourite.
I've noticed.
One of the probably one of the scariest sights in football, the one of the most terrifying sights, is any forward, bearing down on the Albion goal, and then Jan Poole van Hekker coming towards him, smiling.
Well, I tell you who was smiling,
Well, a bit of
I
Hans
was
Cray about that,
certainly
isn't there?
smiling in the second
Sorry, hang
half.
on. Say again, Nick.
Bit of Hans Cray about that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I think it always used to be said about Paul McGrath. That was it, but.
Okay, well, there was, Andy mentioned that there was a momentum shift, and Spurs were finding it very difficult to live with us at that point. And one of the lightning rods in making that happen was Kurt Mitoma, who seems to be back in form, Andy, and it's like delight. That's an absolute delight for us.
Yeah, I think the introduction of Purvis and the fact that Purvis seemed to be Purvis again definitely helped in the second half. I mean, I thought Mitoma was pretty good in the first half as well, but it's really good seeing him get back to his defence terrifying self.
I mean, once those two are together, when they're cooking, they're unplayable. But it's just a case that lately, whether it's injury or whether it's some coming back from suspension or whatever it might be, it's like it with a lot of players. They take a little bit of time to readjust to the pace and the maniac play that we have to have. And Purvis is certainly one of those. I've seen him come on and thinking, actually, could you sub him off? I know he's only been on 2 minutes. Could you sub him off again? But this time around, he was a fellow with a fire in his belly, and Yeah, he wasn't as careless, nothing like as careless as he can be. He was fine. His passes to Mitoma were accurate. Mitoma himself, as you said, AD, getting back to something. I think he's still maybe lost that half yard, but then players, very, very fast players, do tend to do that. So he's got to have that extra sort of couple of yards, as they say, in his head. But once those two get going, and aided and abetted by the fact that, and this is watching so many pundit shows after the game, is the fact that one of the things that Spurs didn't do was get back, and the right back was hopelessly exposed because the person on the right hand side of further up, which was
Your doggy?
no the scorer of the first goal,
Johnson.
Johnson, because Johnson wasn't getting back to help him. And when you've got a couple of maniacs like Estupiñán and Mitoma 2-on-1 against a fellow who's really could do with some help, then yes, we're always going to be having a bit of fun down that side.
Okay, well, Mitoma did actually bring a save out of Vicario before he set up Jorginho to level the scores. And I
Well,
know that.
that's not really. I mean, set up Jorginho had a. By the way, is it Jorginho or Rutter?
He's
Jorginho.
got Jorginho on his back.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, but he had a lot to do.
Yeah, he did have a
It
lot to do. I was coming to
was
that, but
by no
yes.
means a tap in, and he actually muscled past two Tottenham defenders, and then produced quite a sort of gyration to get it back on his left foot and slot it back the way the keeper had come. So yeah, not something we'd seen very much from him before, but
No.
very pleased to see it then.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying about it in private to you guys about the fact that none of the new signings have really set the world on fire yet. But this was Jorginho starting to do so, and he was absolutely magnificent in that second half.
Well, I don't think you could really say that anyone, may, with the exception maybe of Belhiba and maybe Mitoma, were any good in the first half. So when we say they were really good, we were frankly talking about the second half here. What I found funny, I don't know if you've picked up on it at all, Andy, is how salt, well, how half and half, how salty and how proud Leeds United fans are. And let's face it, they're weird when it comes to Brighton players. They are about Rutter. They're either saying, look after him because he's a good player, and others are saying he's a donkey who'll go missing. Funny or pathetic?
Well, the Leeds fans that populate my timelines were very disappointed to see him go because they think he's a really good player, and yeah, they weren't salty about it at all. They were quite disappointed. So, and I think Sunday showed why they were disappointed he's gone because, yeah, in that second half he was absolutely excellent. I think he's been getting better with every performance. With the absence of Pedro, he's kind of like he's not the Pedro sort of understudy, but he's performing that sort of disruptive roving role up front, and I think he's getting more confident. The finish was absolutely superb for his goal, and like, as Nick
Sublime.
said, he did have some work to do, and he got it done. He's used his physicality really well, and if we get more of that out of him, I think it could be a very, very good player for us indeed.
Yeah, indeed.
Potentially contentious point. I'd say that Rutter has made a better start in his first five games than Pedro did.
Oh,
Because he took a
tumbleweed
while to
moment
get
that
going,
one.
did
I
he took a
can't.
while to get going, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, I think he only was scored by the first couple of goals were penalties, and
Well, most of his goals were penalties.
well, yeah, okay, there's that. But what I mean is by that is that I think he's made more of an impact in his first half dozen games than Pedro did. That's not a criticism of Pedro because, nowadays Pedro, all right, I wish he'd stay upright when he doesn't have to go down, but at times he's unplayable as well. And yeah, we're missing him, and thanks very much, you airhead Gibbs White.
You love Morgan Gibbs-White, Al. What he's done, what are you talking about?
Yeah, in the same way that I love something that I don't like.
You can do better than that.
I will, but I was actually about to swear, so I better not.
Yeah, okay, let's not go there. Okay, let's talk about the dogged work from Minte to win a throw, which Veltman took, and he found Jorginho, who had to battle, but somehow found the cross on the touchline, and Welbeck heads home to make it 3-2.
That was brilliant work by Jorginho.
Well, there's so much to like about the goal from way back. You know, the ball down the line and Minte, as you say, winning the throw-in. I mean, I think that goal that he scored gave him confidence because what I wanted to see from him since that first game when he went past the fullback at Everton was him going past fullbacks, whereas he's trying to sort of cut inside and do fancy stuff. And I think going down the line and past fullbacks is still a very valuable contribution to a game. And that's what his effort to do that and won the throw-in. His throw-in to Jorginho was, you know, gave us the Jorginho sort of scuffle past two or three defenders, and everything, you know, went from that.
Yeah. Was that too easy for him to get past those defenders, though? Because, no, I mean, obviously it took a lot of determination to do that, but it was quite weak defending.
Showed what had happened in the second half. He wanted it more. You know, he wanted that ball. I mean, they were content to let it go out or leave it to someone else, and he wasn't going to just let that happen. He wanted that, and, you know, great effort to slide in and get that ball across. And, we got what we deserve, and Spurs got what they deserve from that.
Well, exactly. I mean, they're basically so many elements of their team, of that their defence stopped. I mean, probably the most tenacious part of that goal was in trying to get the ball off Jorginho. Then, like you say, he got it, managed to get it down to the byline. I think Spurs were trying to shepherd it out, but as they, you know, it's easy to say afterwards. In that case, well, it doesn't matter. Stick it in row Z, you know, learn your lesson, and by which time, too late. But yeah, I mean, I love the way the fact that he then sort of got down and kind of crab football like sort of scooped it up. Now, with those things, they never land on a striker's head like the way that did. It just scooped. But it was helped by the fact that the two Spurs defenders in the middle stopped as well. So, you know, Nick's absolutely right. Spurs got what they deserve because their defence just didn't bother their arses.
Perfect positioning by Welbeck as well. Yeah. Again, that's like another feature of Hertzler ball, is that we are getting people in the box in good positions, which is why I think we're like third or fourth top scorers in the league at the moment. And that's where this style of play is leading us. It's designed to put people in better positions to score. It was great. It was just great. I mean, Danny must have just been thinking, they're not just going to stand there, are they? Well, if I must, lads, please permit me to head this in. And,
Is it only Ipswich where we haven't scored?
Yes. Just remind us what your pre-season prediction was again, Andy.
Yeah, that we'd not have a nil-nil in the league. And that lasted as long as Ipswich at home.
I think we've been speaking about the sort of slightly chaotic element of it. And at times it's much more chaotic than the very sort of controlled stuff that De Zerbi imposed on, you know, when we knew exactly who was going to be passed to and where they were going to move. And, you know, this is... well, you know, this is, as I say, just all, well, is it organised chaos? It's brilliant to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think De Zerbi, like, was very keen to, like, drill people on, you know, where they should be. This is a lot more fluid, which I think is the posh word for chaotic. And
Free swim.
Yeah, and... So so that's why I think intensity and confidence are, or you know, as an important part of this as like technique and positional sense, because we just the increased intensity just increased the opportunities. We just had, you know, we didn't have the ball a lot, but we were stealing it a lot. In the middle of the park, we were challenging, just getting our foot in, winning that second ball. And then moving it on quickly, and it just overwhelmed Spurs. I mean, they managed to get one shot later, which Bart did actually manage to save. So that
Was
was a nice, that
that
was a
it for
nice.
shots on target in the second half for them?
I think.
Believe so. Yeah,
Right.
I mean it was after. I mean, basically, we managed to shut the game out pretty much after that. I mean, we.
Because what I saw then after, once we got the third goal, I'll tell you where it was for me that the momentum stopped. And again,
Yeah,
it's
is their
finger
only
pointing.
shot on target in the second half.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you where the momentum stopped and Spurs, once they got back into it, was we had a couple of free kicks within probably about a couple of minutes of each other. And this would have been about 3 or 4 minutes after the third goal. And Hinshelwood took them both, and both of them just so disappointingly were headed out by the first man. I mean, they were poor. And then after that, you felt a kind of a momentum slip away. But by the same token, I also felt that, given the perception of the kamikaze defending that we've had so far this season, we didn't have that. We dropped off to the appropriate places and didn't give Spurs their room. And actually, it's easy, again, easy to say with hindsight, because all it requires is someone to slip. All it requires is a blinding bit of skill. All it takes is a mad deflection. But I also felt that, there were times when I'm thinking, we've been down this road before. We know how to defend this, and we are defending it very well at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited. And Al, where can you get your flowers from?
If you just go to the park with a pair of scissors and help yourself.
Or alternatively,
Alternatively, just head to Flowers Unlimited, Portland Road, Hove. Dave Costa, a lifelong Albion fan, he will offer any Albion fan that wants to have their floral needs met. If you pop in there and tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, they will automatically give you 20% off the bill for your flowers. They do other aspects of, I suppose, anytime you need flowers for whatever occasion, they'll do all other parts of it, greetings cards, and I think possibly even your bottle of booze here and there. I'm
they
not
do
sure.
booze.
They're good. In that case, well, they should be opening up a bar next door as well, in that case. Hours unlimited. And yes, so do pop by to Portland Road, Hove. Tell them that we sent you, and enjoy.
Indeed. Absolutely. Now, I'll tell you what else you enjoyed this weekend, though.
The whole weekend.
Well, you did have a quite busy weekend.
I
You did a how
dis
many Just the three games for you this weekend,
I
and
sort
how many
of
goals, Al?
I lost count at about 70. No, I just saw the fixtures come up and I thought this sits really well. We've got the women playing. I mean, the women playing at Crawley is still an a bugbear for me, but the women so far this season really have turned it around. This is by far and away the fifth, not the best run of Albion performances. There's clearly a better squad, there's a better team, there's a better playing. I say having Fran Kirby and Nikita Paris and now Michelle Adjiman playing, that's no necessarily a bad thing. Vicky Lasada in the middle of the pitch is still pulling strings all over the place. That's the second home game in a row we've scored four goals. And there is clearly a better sea change about watching the Albion women at the moment. I've been watching them for, well, since you and I have, AD, since they were playing at Lancing in the at Sussex FA, in front of sort of one man and his dog, and sort of yearning to be a what was going to be a women's Super League team. You could see their ascent. But clearly things have had to change, and especially when you've got the Lionesses are at the stage that are at, and all the various clubs, hogging the best players. To for the Albion to break into that is going to be a very tough thing to do. And with the new manager there is, and the squad that we've got sorted, there is a new belief about it. I certainly don't think we're going to be relegation fodder this year. Certainly if they carry on the way that they've started. It's really good to watch them. I'm going to go and watch them again. What was it, 19th of October, is it, Andy?
Yeah, I think so.
I know Man U at the Amex. Really looking forward to it. So anyway, 4-2, two red cards, two penalties, terrible ref. and all good fun and a beautiful sunny day. Then headed down from.
Before you go on to that, I should point out that they are actually in action this weekend, and they are going up to Sutton to play Crystal Palace, who just been promoted to the WSL, and hoping to maybe recreate the game you're about to tell us about,
Yes, that would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean,
Al.
let's not hope for too much. But what were the
Well,
chances?
Chelsea put 8 past them the other day.
Well, yeah, but actually, Palace women did win their game over the weekend. So, yes, I wasn't expecting what I was. But it's one of those things you just sort of do we ever sort of wander around? Do we ever sort of have that moment you think, oh, it's so be good, be so good to beat Palace 10-0? And I don't care if it's men's football, women's football, tiddlywinks, kerplunk, or shove halfpenny. Brighton 10, Crystal Palace 0 is such a lovely scoreline to read out. And I was sort of one about the 50 or 60 that were there. Crystal Palace, believe it or not, you know, when they were on the ball, were not bad. They had something about them. They got forward. It's just that Brighton were. It was a bit like Spurs, Brighton against Spurs in the second half. They for the whole game, Brighton were on the front foot. They were 2 or 3 yards ahead of them. They were closing down where Palace had their chances. They may have had one or two chances. I think the Albion had 37. It was 2-0 at half time, and this is with Solly March on the pitch. And he, to be fair, he looked good. He looked comfortable. He was moving fairly easily. And obviously, it's part of his coming back that they'll break him in again. I'm sure he might even play for the under 21s, maybe even this week. Yeah, after half time, they just went berserk. It was just goal, goal, goal. And after we got to about six with about, I don't know, 20 minutes still to go, we thought, can we? Can we? Can we? And we did. And it got to about 90 plus five, but we did. It's one of those things. Solly March gets replaced by a 16-year-old, who himself helps himself to a couple of goals. He has this very much this Darren Anderton about him. He's got this floppy hair. He's got this the socks round around his ankles. He's got this permanent look as if he's left the gas on at home. But then when he gets the ball, he'll just go flying
Who
past
was this,
anyone.
sorry?
Sorry, Harry Howells, we're talking
So
about.
you mean part of the Hinshelwood dynasty?
Part of the Hinshelwood dysentery, yeah. There's another one off the cab rank. Very exciting, and he wasn't even the player of the match. I'd say the
Who
Palace keeper
was?
was. I'd say the Palace keeper was just for.
Yeah.
No,
I
he.
did have to check, 'cause I mean obviously the club put up the show of all the goals, Nick. And I mean it didn't look like it was great defending for any of them really.
No, but it didn't matter. Well, if they just showed the goals, didn't they? We didn't get the there
No.
wasn't an actual stream at the time. So, I'll take Alan's word for it about the goalkeeper. But if you think about Howells and Simmons, who are England players at under 16 level, and they're playing what an under 21 level now. So they're how many age groups ahead of where they could be? There's a lot to like in the under 21 squad, and a lot of the people you hear about are forwards, but Simmons, I think, is possibly the next great Albion defender to come out. I've seen a lot of the under 21s and reported on for the website, and I haven't been that impressed by the defenders, but I think we've definitely got something in Simmons, and of course forward. There's plenty of options.
Yeah.
Next year's crop of loanees or possibly
Yeah.
first team bench players.
Well, it's unusual. I mean, defenders we generally been quite good at bringing through. I mean, you have to look at the long list of all the Hinshelwoods, Lewis Dunk,
Ben
even Adam
White.
Webster's from Sussex, although he didn't actually come through the academy, did he? But you know, it's only really like Solly March of the former players have really actually. Of well, Sussex born and bred players. I mean, obviously Evan Ferguson came through. I can't talk today. He obviously
Yay.
came through.
Please
He
don't
obviously
then.
came through that as well. But I mean, we're not really that great at bringing through forward players, and when we do, they tend to crash and burn. Like Aaron Connolly being the class example.
Yes, but do you know what? It's the it wasn't even so much the quality of the force. It just seemed to be the number of them. We had the back four, and then everyone else was playing centre forward, it felt
Because
like.
the thing you've got to remember is that these days we're trying to bring players through to be Premier League players and top half of Premier League players. You know, a couple of years ago, Connolly might have had a couple of seasons, or you might have become a regular if we'd been in the championship at the time.
Yeah.
But you know, I remember talking to Liam Brady when he was in charge of the Arsenal Academy, and saying that, saying, "Oh well, you know, you're putting all this money into an academy, and who have you had? You know, Jack Wiltshire." He said, "Well, yeah, but Fabrice Muamba that we sold to Bolton, and you know, you've got to remember we're trying to bring somebody into a Champions League team, and there are very few of those players about, and that's it's at a slightly lower level is the situation we're dealing with."
Absolutely. I mean, this is where someone like Jack Hinshelwood, and this is where we're talking to Vic Bragg about this about 3 or 4 weeks ago on the show. This is where what I think sort of shows the innate talent that Jack Hinshelwood and the attitude and his approach to the game. And you're talking about how many age groups he is below the maximum. You know, Hinshelwood's still 3 years younger than the maximum for under 21s. And you know, he could have a 3 year under 21 career if he. If you know the FA actually acknowledged Brighton and Hove Albion's existence, it was good to see Ed Turns was back playing for us. You know, he was strapped up but managed to play through the 90, and playing superbly. Hardly anything got past him. Josh Dufus finally found where the net was. That was pretty cool as well.
Interesting. They decided to play him down the middle a lot more this season. He's looked a lot better there.
Yeah. No, I agree. Perpignan, he got the first goal. The first one was a little bit, you know, sort of mossy. I think probably apart from that goal, the collective distance for the other nine was probably no more than about 45, 50 yards. They were all tapping. We didn't have any screamers. But yeah, even then, when I see Cam Perpignan playing, he's very, very good for the under 21s. And I wouldn't like to think we're going to rush him through, but he's still yet to make that step up. You know, even when he started for the first team, you can still see, not yet. Go back to the stiffs and learn a bit more. But even then, he managed 4 assists against Palace. I mean, it's just these numbers are absolutely fantastic. You know, sort of someone scored 3 with 2 more assists. One got a goal and then 4 assists. Solly March came back and played. We've got a, you know, an 8-year-old playing in the form of a Harry Howells. You know, it's so bizarre and so frightening. And the other thing I'd say about it is apart from being in the press room at Lancing, it was my first time going to watch a game there. And so you walk from the car park to the pitch, and that's where you get, Nick, I'm sure you can acknowledge this, just how vast that place is.
There's a press room. Why have I never found it?
Well, it's the one that's got soft padding on it.
I've been in those press seats with those weird tables at the training ground. But oh no, yeah, it's huge. Yes, and you wonder how many of those in enormous number of pitches they ever use at any one time. But
You know, a beautiful place. It was just one of those beautiful autumnal days. Lovely sunset. Albion 10, Crystal Palace nil. It was just, you know, it's going to start raining chocolate in a minute. I actually just thought the Spurs game was going to be an after the Lord Mayor show job.
Okay, before we move on from that, actually, it is just worth pointing out what an incredible job Inigo Calderon is actually doing with the under-18s as well.
Yes, he
and,
is.
And I think they're still unbeaten, I think, aren't they?
I'm not sure, but they're certainly sticking them away. Certainly sticking them away. Right. I think all that just leaves us with is now is just a quick preview ahead of talking of the under 21s, Andy. Are you popping over to see the X this week with Dean?
Yes. Off to with Dean. Our old stomping ground. It will be it'll be quite a nostalgic evening.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'll be back in if the press box is still there. I'll be in it.
The porter cabin.
Well, there was. I just hope that they haven't sold the roof to somebody else. Or so, yeah, it's and there's some electricity and Wi-Fi, maybe. Maybe the Whistling Sportsman Wi-Fi. I'll have to sort of piggyback.
But it's going to be the first time we've seen a match there without the south stand seats. I mean, obviously, we watch the games from the seats rather than, you know, with a view of the seats. But and in fact, actually, the south stand was a much better view, and actually not that bad, weirdly enough, was it, Andy?
No, the south stand was excellent. The north stand, I thought we were a bit too low down. Did go in there a couple of times when we were sponsoring the match, but But yeah, no, I mean, I have so many happy memories of that place. It was just brilliant. It's where I became an Albion fan for real. And I really enjoyed all 12 years of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
On Wednesday night, but that is all we've got time for now. And obviously, we'll be talking about that next week. So, in the meantime, thank you very much to Andy Bass. Thank you to Nick Trepanic. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on a podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again soon. See you then. Bye.
She's a perfect 10, but she wears a 12. Baby, keep a little 2 for me. She could be sweet 16, busting out of the seams. There's still love in the first degree.
When he's at my game, with a big fat A, you wanna see the smile on my face. And even at my door, with a poor, 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 there ain't no man can replace. 'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight. If he's extra large,
that's me.
Well, I'm in charge. I can work this thing on top. And if he's XXL, well, what the hell? Every penny don't fit the slot.
Ah, the anorexic chicks, the model six, they don't hold no weight with me. Well, 8 or 9, well, that's just fine. But I like to hold something I can see. 'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight.
A bottle watch to time your beauty. I've had a fit of second hand.
I've bought a calendar, and every month is taken up by the love of man.
'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight. Especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight.